All right, hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. February 2, 2026. Beautiful day here on the east side of the country. I hope it's great wherever you are at. It is Monday. Back to the grind. It is freezing here on the east side of the country. I don't know wherever you are at, but man, it's cold and it is icy. We had that snowstorm a week ago, and of course, right after that snowstorm, they started with this next snowstorm, which was supposed to hit yesterday, and last Monday, it was going to be a whopper, right? Big storm. And then, of course, over the week, you know, it dwindled down to, actually, we had nothing. Nothing, and thank goodness, because whatever storm we had the last time put down enough snow that it's still frozen, man. Everything is frozen, and it seems to be the theme all across the East Coast. My brother upstate, they got more snow than us on the first storm, and he says it's a mess. And he's got a big old truck, right? And a buddy of his was stuck. He's like, I'll help you. And he tried to back up over this snowbank to try to be able to pull his buddy out, and he high-centered. His big four-wheel drive was high-centered and powerless. And, yeah, it's bad. New York is bad. Everything's bad. A lot of snow. My in-laws upstate, they got a ton of snow. They're locked in with the freeze. So, yeah, man, it has been pretty boring. Not a whole lot going on. A lot of inside stuff. Working. Everything's going well. I thought I would come upstairs, see if I could sit down and do a podcast. Been trying to be a little better about it, enjoying it. I did go to a meeting today. Like I said, it is Monday, and finishing that story, you know, I like the girl that's running this meeting because she will just, you know, pick up where we left off, and we just read a bit, you know, a few chapters, a few pages, and then open up the meeting. Some people like to try to read the whole chapter. I don't know, but it was a good chapter. It's still a good chapter. It's like the bottom of page 31 or something, 32. But it's about Jim, right? Jim who decides to go to, I don't know what he's doing. I guess he's in the car business. And it's always funny reading these stories because definitely a different time, clearly. Different way of thinking. He was going to visit another town to reach out to a prospect that might be interested in buying a car, right? Can you imagine being a door-to-door salesman selling cars? But he was going to another town or something like that to look for a prospect and ended up stopping to buy a sandwich and a glass of milk, right? And he has the sandwich and he has the glass of milk and he decides to have another sandwich, another glass of milk, but he decides this time it might be a good idea to put some bourbon in the milk. And I think he does that a couple times. I don't know where he ends up. We didn't read that far, but I think it's pretty clear, you know, how that story ends. And it's usually not good. And, you know, when I read that story, and I even shared today, I said, you know, clearly this is before AA. I don't know that that's a fact, but I'm assuming that, you know, since it's one of the stories in the big book, it's probably taking place before AA has gotten itself together and, you know, giving some people a solution. Because back in those days, it was, you know, jails, institution, or death.
Hey, God, I need a minute of your time. I know that I've been missing lately. I've had a lot of things on my mind. Hey, God, I feel my life slipping away. There's so much left. Years are passing by like days.
Hey God, Megadeth. That is Megadeth's new album, which is very good. The production of this record is incredible. I've always been a big fan of Megadeth. I don't know why I don't pay attention to them more, but great album. What caught me my attention to this album is they do a bonus track of Ride the Lightning, which is, of course, if you're a Megadeth Metallica fan and lived around in those days, we all know that Dave Mustaine was in Metallica and was thrown out because, you know, different stories. I definitely think the main part of it was that he was a big drinker. And so I think Dave Mustaine now is sober. He must be. He can't have as much success as he's had and still be carrying on like he did. So a lot of appreciation. But he does a version of Ride the Lightning on this album, which is just incredible. If anybody has been following those bands, they know that Ride the Lightning was a huge song back in the day on Ride the Lightning, of course. And so fun to hear that. Fun to hear that song and, you know, great sort of message, right? Hey, God. So, yeah, the meeting was great. The story was great. Somebody shared and, you know, and I think it may have even been in the story how there is no defense against the first drink. And I don't know if someone said that or if it was in that story, but that's what sort of made me think, you know, maybe this story was prior to recovery, because I can tell you, I do have a defense against the first drink. I do not have any defense against the second one, right? I always say, especially when I'm working with new people, if you drink, call me tomorrow. There's nothing I can do for you once the first drink goes in, right? I've always wanted a shirt that says, I got sober because of the 13th one or something like that, right? It was always... But yeah, there is for me, luckily, thank God, there is a defense from the first drink, and it is God, right? It is recovery. It is the 12 steps of this program, and it's the community, right? The community of recovery that I am a part of and I am in the middle of, right? I always try to, when I work with new people, you know, the one thing I ask of them is to get in the middle of the herd, right? I'm not going to... I don't want to say waste my time, but my time could be better spent with people that are first to the meeting, right? Last to leave, hands up, taking commitments, shaking hands, helping with coffee, whatever it is that they can do to be in the middle of the herd. The last one to show up, the first one to leave, I become bothered, right? I become... Like, I don't want to sit here and tell people, you got to do this and you got to do that. But, you know, if you're going to be in recovery, you probably should be at a meeting early, right? And you should probably be one of the last people to leave because we don't have a lot of stuff going on. So, but yeah, it was, you know, it's the community and recovery and it's God. You know, today it is about God. I've shared before, I definitely, you know, once a drink goes in my mouth, there's some spiritual thing that happens. A possession of almost of if I could say, but before the first drink goes in, it's really a decision making problem, right? I make bad choices because I don't care, and if I did care or I was aware of the feeling of a person that cared, I push that down. You know, I can think of especially even before drinking. You know, I've shared before my big thing was smoking pot. And it was always, I mean, oh my God, my dad would put so many barriers up, right? He would drug test us, right? And he would say, I'm going to drug test you at the end of the month. If you're dirty, you're going to be grounded. And I'd say, okay, I'm not going to smoke any pot. And then the pot would come. And not only would it, it's not like pot would show up. We would go search for it, right? And we would find it. And there was never a moment where I cared what the consequences would be. Never a moment did I care if my father would be, you know, upset or tortured by my behavior. Never did I care about, you know, skipping school and my grades and my future. I cared about none of that. All I cared about was serving what me, myself, and I wanted, which was to get high and hang out and have fun. And so, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I have a decision-making problem. I really have a caring problem. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I should, you know, not still, you know, give all the importance to the fact that if I do have one drink, I cannot stop. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that I can work on prior to that even happening. You know, when I first got sober, I've shared before, I have three sobriety dates. March 31st, 1997, I came into the program through the hospital in an act of providence. August 20, 2006, woke up to an empty house, came into the program, or actually made a phone call to Marvin L. up in York, Pennsylvania, who drove down and picked me up out of an act of providence, right? I woke up to an empty house. Ego devastation, complete humiliation. And the devil left, and I, you know, in fact, you know, and I have to clarify that, because actually waking up to an empty house, the devil was like, finally, we can drink like we want. And I did. I probably drank and drugged for another couple of weeks. And then, you know, it's, I won't say at the moment, but there was a moment. You know, I'll never forget standing on that porch after a long night of drinking and drugging and just being like, what have I done? What have I done? And that would be the moment that I called Marvin L. And I remember going to a meeting that day. He's like, I'll come and pick you up. You know, I'll be there around 5. And so I remember hitting up a meeting downtown and just, you know, sweating and shaking and just, you know, feeling horrible and being at the bottom and him finally coming to get me. And then, of course, changing my sobriety date a couple years later because of the use of Vicodin and pain pills, abusing them. Not using them. I was abusing them. And, you know, and that got me into a predicament, which was another act of providence, right? Because, you know, I behaved and said things that I typically wouldn't say unless I was under the influence of some medication. And unfortunately, pills are even worse, man. That was bad. And, of course, making the phone call to my sponsor and telling him that I've been using the pills, and he said, you're going to have to change your sobriety date again. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not drinking. And he goes, it doesn't matter. You will not find serenity. And that would open up a lot of sort of windows for me. The reality is that, oh, this isn't just a drinking thing, right? It's a self-centered thing. It's a I don't care thing. It's a I make bad decision thing. It's a selfish disease thing. It was a lot of things, but he was right. And I did. And I changed my sobriety date December 22nd, 2008. You know, and God willing, I won't have to do that again. But it wasn't because, you know, I had no defense against the first drink. You know, when I came into the program in 97, I jumped in both feet. You know, I was in that outpatient program. I met my buddy Rick. I met my buddy Tim. I met all these great people. Ron M. was my temporary sponsor. I mean, it was like a fresh world, a fresh breath of air. I just jumped in with both feet. And I went for it and went to a meeting every day. Someone said do 90 and 90. I think I did 120 and 90. I was very proud of that, you know, just wanting everyone to see how serious I was about getting sober this time. And the only reason I think I had any success is because Ron M. put me in the middle of the herd, right? He's like, hey, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor. This is Mike. This is Bill. This is Jim. This is Phil. This is Al. You know, it's like, shake these guys' hands, make eye contact, be accountable to not just me, not just you, but now we're accountable to all these people. And for a people pleaser like I was, and probably still am, you know, I was like, you know what, guys, I'm going to be sober. You know, I'm going to prank all of you proud. And I did. It was fantastic. It was a new life. And I did that for 4 years. And, you know, I was still, and I have to be honest about this, you know, I had pulled my back in 99. I was still taking pain pills in 99. Well, 99 is when I hurt my back. But there would be, like, every couple months, I would have this back flare up, and I would call the doctor, and he would give me these pain pills, and I would use them. I didn't, really wasn't abusing them. But over a couple periods of a couple years, I started to take more and more. And, you know, I took this job over in Eastern Maryland. I reported for duty January 1st, 2000, and I was struggling in this pain pill thing. I remember I had to get a new doctor over in Easton, but not, you know, in my mind, I was just doing it because of the back pain. But the spiritual malady that I suffer from and the devils and the demons that were in me knew exactly what they were doing. And they just started, you know, kind of working me over. And my defense started to crumble away. And I remember going to my first meeting, and I maybe went to a few, but I did not like the way they collected the money, right? Something that stupid. And there was a voice that was like, hey, we'll find another meeting. This is clearly not the meeting for us. They don't collect the money at the right time. And so we'll find something else. And I was like, yes, let's do that. And then we never did, right? And then I had a conversation with my ex-wife about, I think I can drink. And she's like, you do? I said, yeah, I think I can, right? I was slowly being influenced by outside sources. And then I would drink, right? And, you know, I would fake it like it wasn't a big of a deal. And it maybe wasn't that big of a deal the first couple times. But then I started to drink when she wasn't there, right? We had negotiated a deal. I would only drink on the weekends. Oh, my God, what a nightmare that was. But I've shared before, she worked in a different city, and it was a lot of driving for her. And I would get home around 3:30. She got home around 5:30. So it left me with a couple hours to, you know, live with the demons. And that's exactly what I did. And I would buy vodka and I would drink it. And I could buy a little bottle. And if I had two big cups, two big glasses, I would definitely get a buzz, and it would satisfy whatever I needed at that time and still be able to act normal when she got home. But we all know the story, right? And I would eventually have a little too much, right? And she'd be like, have you been drinking? And then I'd have to say, I slipped. I had this one incident, which I was drinking the whole day. It was just, I mean, every day. It was just a big lie. And then I would apologize, and I would be dry for a few weeks and hit back up the meetings. And then, but with, you know, the damage was done. I had already let the devil back in. There was no defense at this point. The next defense would be, unfortunately, an act of providence. And we had a couple of them. You know, I shared when we went to Norway, we had just got done having an act of providence, right? I had gotten drunk and done something. I don't even remember what it was. And, you know, there was a real, it was on the table whether I'd be going to Norway or not. And it was on the table where I'd be even part of the family or not. And somehow, I don't know, we decided I would. I remember I was going to be better, reading a big book on the plane. And that's when I saw that, you know, faith without works is dead. And, you know, it's just been an interesting journey. But the, you know, the final time, another act of providence. You know, my brother told me something the other day, which, you know, I had forgotten about. And he goes, you remember when you smashed that guitar against the wall? And I hadn't. And then when he mentioned it, I did. I remember. And it was a beautiful guitar my wife had bought me for my birthday. And under the influence, right, I had turned into this raging lunatic. And I decided to smash a guitar against the wall. And I think that would be the beginning of the end of our marriage. If not, that may have even been the night. I can't quite remember. But I know that she was like, this guy's out of his mind. And I was, right? I was possessed by a devil. And I have to believe that because there is no excuse for that behavior. I don't smash guitars against walls today. You know, I don't yell. I don't scream. We have a great, you know, we have conversations, right? We've had moments, but no worse than anybody else. But we figure it out. We don't let it last long. And we move on. And, but, you know, it was all started because I decided that I didn't want to go to a meeting. And, you know, today it is the most important thing I do. The defense that I have against the first drink is God, the program, the 12 steps, and the community. And, you know, the only friends, I have a couple friends that are normies, sort of, but most of my friends are all in recovery. The people I talk to on a daily basis are people that I sponsor. I have meeting at my house with the guys I sponsor. And then I go to 3 to 4 meetings a week. And that's, you know, I'm not going to say that's a perfect setup. I mean, I just can't go to a meeting every day. You know, I've tried that. You know, meetings do get boring. You know, I have to do just as many. You know, I feel 3 a week is actually pretty decent. And I can always add one if I need to. But I know that today that is the most important thing that I do. There is no graduation, right? We build up no recovery credit. You know, when I did 120 meetings in 90 days, I think back in my mind, I thought I was going to be even safer, right? Even better, because 90 was suggested, but I did 120, so that's got to be better. And, yeah, it was fine at the time, but, you know, it doesn't save us. I don't get recovery credit. I don't get meeting credits. I just left a meeting. I just got home, starting fresh, right? I could go to a meeting tonight. I probably will not. But, you know, if that was something I needed, it's there. But there is no credit. I'm just blessed and lucky. And, you know, through the steps of this program and going to meetings and showing up and continuously working at it and working with others, you know, that's one of the nice things about working with others is that, you know, when someone works with me, I sort of get an idea. But then when I got to try to help teach this or explain it or, you know, just help shine a little light on it, I start to look at it a little differently, right? I start to say, okay, you know, maybe I'm not doing such a great job in certain areas. I can maybe do a little better now that I, you know, put it that way. And, but, you know, it's always about being accountable, right? And I think that's the number one thing that I missed as a person prior to getting sober was accountability, right? I had that victim attitude. It was everybody else's fault. I met with one of the guys I sponsor. We met on Sunday, and I still share that story, right, of that guy, John, who punched me in the head in San Diego, and how my father and I would, every time we got together, that story would come up, and what a terrible person that guy was, and what a victim I was. Poor me. I had to go to the hospital because I had a fracture in my face, and my dad, of course, had to take me, and it was the worst thing that ever happened, and you know, we could never heal from that because I wasn't accountable. And then that day came and I said, you know, Dad, I said, had I not gone there, I wouldn't have been punched in the face. And so I'm starting to believe that this actually might have been my fault. And my dad's like, what? Like, how could it be your fault? You got punched in the face. And I go, I know, but I wasn't invited, right? We were over there looking for drugs. We walked in the house, didn't even ring the doorbell. And, you know, back in those days, there was sort of a loose kind of vibe, especially North County, San Diego, Encinitas, Leucadia. Everyone's kind of like skateboarding, surfing, smoking weed. Everyone seems to be living in someone's back house or a one bedroom. And I don't know. You know, it's not like we kicked in the door and stormed in. I think we just assumed. My buddy Rob was friends with him. He just assumed we could walk in. I just assumed since Rob walked in, I could walk in. And you know what that happens when we assume, right? Well, I got punched in the face. But the point is that I had to become accountable. I had to take responsibility. And one of the greatest things I think today as far as recovery is that I don't have to be a victim of anything today. You know, whether it was John or any other situation, right, I talked about crashing my car into the sign on the off-ramp off the 5 and getting out and saying, who the hell put the sign here, right? Never considering the fact that I was a drunk. I was drunk driving. I was driving in a rage because I had just gotten in a fight with my dad. I was out of my mind, possessed by a devil, threw the car off the highway, threw it around the turn, and hit a pole. And I had the audacity to get out and try to blame somebody who put the pole there. No accountability. And I think that's one of the biggest things, you know, we admit, right? To admit, I think it's the first humble, accountable thing I had done, right? And I don't even know if I did it that well in the beginning, right? I would look back and have to kind of revisit the first step years into it to sort of look back and say, am I admitting that I'm powerless over self, right? Because I could change that. We admit we're powerless over self, that our actions have become unmanageable. And when I started looking at it like that, I'm like, well, shit, that's now I understand. And, but yeah, it is through the steps of this program that I have built a relationship with God. And today, when situations or decisions come up that I think may be bad, I hear about it. I hear about it. And what I hear is I hear God telling me, saying, listen, I'm not sure it's a good idea. Let's think about it twice. You know, let's think about it 3 times and act once. Right? Let's think about it 4 times and say it once. Right. I think the longer I go, the more I think about it. And, you know, and then it's sort of, I've kind of been going through this that, you know, the fact that I thought about it, right? That sort of bums me out. You know, at least I have the idea that, you know, God is watching over me and that I, you know, when something like that, and it won't be, should I go drink, right? But it may be, you know, do I want to go hang out at a wine tasting, right? Like, it's about five bad choices. You know, when I came in the program, I used to say, I'm one bad decision away from drinking. Today, I'm about 10, right? But, you know, I've gotten down to probably six, maybe with four to spare. And then I've been like, you know, what are you doing? Right? What are we doing? And so, yeah, it's a it was a great meeting. Really feel good today. I definitely have a defense against the first drink if I choose to use it. And that's the this program, God and the community. And for that, I'm really grateful. All right, let me read the Daily Reflections. What's her time here? Time. Oh, time. All right, here we go. Daily Reflections. Rescued by surrendering. Huh, interesting. There you go. February 2nd. Characteristics of the so-called typical alcoholic is a narcissistic, egocentric core, dominated by feelings of omnipotence, intent on maintaining at all costs its inner integrity. Inwardly, the alcoholic brooks no control from man or God. He is the alcoholic, is and must be the master of his destiny, and he will fight to the end to preserve that position. I wonder if every acting alcoholic is a narcissist. Or, I don't even know if you have to drink, right? I mean, probably, but my wife and I were just talking about narcissism because she's called me one. I've called her one. I follow some people on Instagram, and this lady posts these stories about narcissists, and I'm like, okay, they're sick. Anyway, here we go. AA Comes of Age, page 311. The great mystery is, why do some of us die alcoholic deaths, fighting to preserve the independence of our ego, while others seem to sober up effortlessly in AA? Help from a higher power, the gift of sobriety, came to me when an otherwise unexplained desire to stop drinking coincided with my willingness to accept the suggestions of the men and women of AA. I had to surrender, for only by reaching out to God and my fellows could I be rescued. That's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, when, you know, many years into recovery, not having a drink or a drug, and then having that moment where I decided, you know, I think that it's my fault that I got punched in the face. That's me surrendering my ego and my pride, because ego and pride are saying, that son of a bitch did you dirty, right? And because my ego and my pride doesn't want me to get better. And it was so funny because that story carried in through our lives for years. I mean, years, even, you know, prior to my dad going into the veterans home, we had sat on the back porch and that story had come up. And that was when I said, I think that that was my fault. And it really, you know, it allowed us to heal and it allowed us to put that story behind us and not have to bring it up anymore, which to me is, you know, that's healing. So anyway, I appreciate you letting me share. I hope everyone has a great day, and I'll catch you later. Bye-bye. I know it doesn't look so good.